Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, OSHA Takes Aim at Poultry Processors, How to Get Out of the Line of Fire. My name is Chase, and I will be moderating today's session. I would like to take an opportunity to introduce Ed Folk. Ed will be one of our presenters today. He is a partner in the Atlanta office of Fisher & Phillips, LLP, which is a leading national labor and employment law firm. Ed Folk has over 30 years of experience representing employers in thousands of OSHA inspections and citation contests. Before joining Fisher & Phillips, he served as OSHA's Assistant Secretary of Labor under George W. Bush's administration. Welcome, Ed, and thank you for taking time today. In addition, I would like to introduce Marcus Sparks. Marcus has been an account manager here at Alchemy for the past 8 years and brings an additional 20 years of business development and account management experience with a passion for learning and development. Marcus advises on practical tools, technologies for success in today's challenging operational environment. Welcome, Ed and Marcus. Today's session, Ed is going to talk specifically about the poultry industry in the crosshairs, the supervisor's legal role, and what safety responsibilities need to be taken into consideration. He will explain the entire inspection process, including pre-inspection, as well as possible citations and penalties. And Marcus will wrap up the session this afternoon by discussing the poultry industry's reaction to OSHA enforcement. And then we will hopefully finish up with about 15 minutes of Q&A. With no further ado, I will turn it over to Ed. And thank you again for everyone taking the time out of their afternoon to join us today.
Great, thank you very much, and good morning or good afternoon, I guess, depending on what part of the country you're in. But I did want to kind of first start off by thanking Alchemy for putting on this program. I mean, it is a critical thing that, a critical topic, really, for the poultry industry, and this has been heightened over the last, I'd say 6 months or so, where there's been a real focus on OSHA, particularly in certain regions of the country, which we'll talk about in a minute, very much focused on the poultry industry and expanding and doing fairly comprehensive wall-to-wall inspections of their facilities. So it is going to be very critical going forward. And the other reason why this is very important, and I'm trying to remember, I think we may have something on one of the slides, but I might as well mention it right now. Come August of this year, you're going to see a 82% increase in the penalty amounts, the maximum penalty amounts for OSHA. So I was very disappointed on this particular thing because this came through, this was passed in a budget bill, was actually buried in a budget bill. I actually have having my past background, I worked on a lot of campaigns, Republican, mostly Republican presidential campaigns, but also states, U.S. Senate, U.S. House. And after this came out, the budget bill was passed, I saw a friend of mine who was at the time, who is currently a U.S. Senator, who I'd worked on a number of, started on his first state Senate campaign and then worked on his congressional campaigns and then his U.S. Senate campaigns. And I saw him at a luncheon, and at the time he was running for president, he's no longer running for president. And I mentioned this thing about this, and it was surprising that he knew nothing about it. And I'm afraid that, that a lot of people didn't know about it. I mean, I have a good idea which Democratic senator stuck it in the bill, or in the budget bill. But, you know, it is what it is. It would never have passed on its own, but it's an issue that we have to address this. So, and let me see, I guess we go next. I guess, but I did want to say, first start off by just saying thank you for those who are on the program, for your commitment to safety now. It really is important. The sad thing that I've noticed since I've been doing this since 1980, the safety professionals do not get a lot of credit for what they do, because as they do things, as they do, and put out safety and health policies and procedures, as they do the training, as they do the walkthroughs, as they do all this, they do the metrics and all those things, that eventually, but basically, result in the employees being safer and avoiding injuries. You don't get any credit for it, because if something doesn't happen, no one knows it would have happened, and therefore you don't get credit for it. But really, the things that you're doing at your sites and for your companies are allowing people, allowing your coworkers, your friends, your neighbors, maybe even your relatives, to go home safe and sound each and every night to their families and loved ones. So that really is very important. So I just want to say thank you for that. Why I said one of the things I talked about here is why the poultry industry is in the crosshairs. Well, this is what's going on right now. It kind of really started back in 2015 there. You see October 28, 2015. Tom Galassi, who's the director of the Director of Enforcement Programs, who was there, was at OSHA when I was head of OSHA. He sent out an email a memorandum to all the regional administrators and all the state plans, and basically said that when you're doing any type of inspection of a poultry in this poultry slaughtering and poultry processing is one of the areas that they cover. He basically said in the memo, when you're doing these inspections, you shall cover. Actually, I have the memorandum right in front of me, so I can see it. You shall cover the hazards listed below, and here's part of the inspection for all inspection, even if it's a complaint inspection, and that's where we get a little issues here. But basically, here's the issues. Here's the thing: you got to cover ergonomics and musculoskeletal disorders. Well, it was one, two, personal protective equipment and payment, particularly for payment for PPE. And who's paying for it, that the employer, in most cases are required to pay for the PPE. Lockout, tagout, electrical issues, machine guarding, slips, trips and falls, process safety management, basically focused in on ammonia, and that's your refrigeration stuff. Chemical hazards such as ammonia, chlorine, hydrogen peroxide, prussic acid, carbon dioxide that you once again use in your carbon dioxide is used in the freezing process. Occupational noise, blocked exits and egress, and then sanitation and cleanup. So you can see that this is basically a wall-to-wall inspection. It's extremely comprehensive, and so this has been in place, and this is for all poultry processing. Now, there is a problem with that, because if you have a complaint inspection, at least I think there's a problem from a legal standpoint, that if you have a OSHA shows up, and starts wanting to, based on a complaint, and then we'll talk about that in a second, but basically, anytime OSHA shows up, you need to ask them why they're there. Now, under the record keeping reporting requirements that changed back on January 1st, 2015, we all have to call OSHA in if we have a work-related fatality, if we have a work-related hospitalization of one employee, if we have a work-related amputation, which is can mean just a fingertip, or if we have a physical loss of an eye, we have to contact OSHA. For the fatality, we have 8 hours to call OSHA, a work-related fatality. But on the work-related hospitalization of one employee, amputation or loss of eye, we have 24 hours to contact OSHA. Well, I can fatalities when you call them, how you provide the information to them, if it's a heart attack, and that's the other thing too, you're required, OSHA takes a position if it's a work-related heart attack. Now that, once again, work-related, this is very critical. I get a lot of calls from clients when they have these type of situations that say, Ed, because OSHA is expecting, if you have a fatality on your work site, they're expecting you to call. So if you don't call, you better have a sound reason that it's not work related, okay? But that's their position that they take. But you need to be aware of that things, and on that particular situation, you need to be trying to determine fairly quickly from either the coroner or the hospital or EMT or whoever, was this somehow work related? Now I had a case that OSHA kind of was getting on me, getting on my client, but I got involved in it. But basically, we had a person, a manager, who attended a late afternoon meeting that ended at 5 o'clock. And he, after the meeting ended at 5 o'clock, he went back to his office. He's in his office at 8:30 that night. The cleaning staff find him slumped over his desk dead. So the question there is, do we have to contact OSHA? Is this work-related? And my position was, this is not work-related, because he's just sitting there, had nothing to do, he was just sitting there. You know, he wasn't doing anything strenuous or anything else. This is work-related. Well, I'm trying to remember if it was the coroner or if the hospital had contacted OSHA, and that's when they called my client, and they were saying, well, let's get back to you. Why didn't you call us? And the answer, that's when I got involved with them, and that basically said, this is not work-related. And they finally agreed with me because they couldn't really show that it was work-related, and so was that. So this is very important. But, you know, once you get called in, if you know they're coming in, you still need to ask them, what is the basis of this inspection? If they say a complaint inspection, you've got to ask for the complaint, and you've got to say, I understand this here. Now, and of course, they're going to say, well, we want to kind of go and do all this other stuff. Well, the answer is no, because we're only giving you the authority, we're only consenting to the inspection based on what the complaint is, okay? And not beyond that. And we're not going to consent to any improper expansion of the inspection, which I believe, and I think that's a position that, a lot of our attorneys in our office here, we've talked about this, that this is not a program inspection like the ones in the next three that we're going to talk on the regional emphasis programs. So if they're coming in and it's not based on the regional emphasis programs, then the position should be, okay, it's a complaint inspection. We're permitting you to go based on the complaint, and if that's all. And you need to state that at the opening conference, okay? Thank you for your complaint. We will allow you to come here and do the inspection of the complaint items, period. And when they start trying to expand it, which they're going to do in the poultry industry based on this memorandum back on October 2015, they're going to try to expand. So you want to make sure that you know that happened. So if you have that situation, you really need to articulate that you're limiting their inspection to what's in the complaint. And you probably need to be contacting your corporate counsel or your OSHA counsel, just because the fact that they're going to try to expand this inspection, and you're going to need a little backup more than likely. You want to inform your other facilities too that this is going on, because they'd be, potentially subject to them doing some type of follow-up on other facilities. And of course, one of the things, if you get nothing out of, there's a lot of things I want you to get out of this program, but I do want you to always do, when you're working with OSHA, to be cordial and professional. No matter how hard it gets sometimes, because unfortunately it has been getting hard or better, where a lot of inspectors think they can do whatever they want to do, and they can't do whatever they want. That's one of the main things you want to get out of this program, that you have rights, it's your facility, we got to maintain control, and if you don't maintain control, it's just going to get bad. Because I've had clients that have felt like if they told OSHA everything they knew, and if they showed them everything and gave them every document they had, that somehow that would make things right, and they wouldn't have to, OSHA would just go away. Well, guess what? That ain't going to happen. All it's going to do is increase you're going to get more citations more likely than not. So we want to always maintain control in that. Now, these regional emphasis program, it's very interesting, but you can see here, Region 4 was the one that kind of, it says Region 6 did it at the same time, but as I understand it, the word was they were at a RA's regional administrators meeting, and the head of OSHA was with him, my successor, Dr. Michaels, and Region 4 was talking about this emphasis program they were doing in the poultry industry, and then Dr. Michaels turned to the guy, the regional administrator from Region 6, which is based out of Texas, and said, well, you got a lot of plants, you got Arkansas in your connection. You got Texas and Louisiana. There's a bunch of, and even I think Oklahoma. I think there's, but I think he was thinking about Arkansas. He's thinking there's a lot of poultry plants processing in your region. What are you doing? And the regional administrator supposedly said, oh, we're just doing the same thing that Region 4 is doing. So that's kind of how that started out. The Region 7, this just came out here not too long ago with their emphasis program. Theirs is a little bit different. They're not going into as much detail or not the number of things that they're doing. But under the regional emphasis program, now this is going to be more difficult. If they come in and they're doing this, if they come in and doing an inspection, if you ask them, why are you here? And they say, we're here on a regional emphasis program, then it is real much more difficult to limit the inspection because technically they have a broad path because they have a process in place to determine those. So on region, I want to mention the stuff that they're going to be focusing on. Once again, they are going to be doing a whole series of things, and here's the areas that they're going to be looking at. And this is in the compliance directive or the National Emphasis Program. It's CPL 16/08. This is the one for Region 4. Anyway, when they're coming in, they're going to be looking at. They have general procedures in the document there that talks about that. But they also say they're going to, prior to the inspection, they're going to look at your history and see what has been done in the past. Now, if you've had a comprehensive inspection in the last 3 years, then you're going to there's a good chance they may decide not to do that. But they're going to be looking at this. But the elements they're going to want to get on site, they're going to look at record keeping because the funny thing is they've done these studies, they've done these emphasis program of record keeping, and I think that what they ended up finding out there was just as much over-reporting as under-reporting. But there's a general belief among the politicals at OSHA and the unions, to be quite frank, the unions have really pushed this stuff, that employers are lying on the 300 box. So one of the things they're going to look at very carefully is the record keeping. And tied into that, then they're going to look into the medical records and first aid logs, those type of things to see, once again, is this employer under-reporting? They're not going to look too hard to find if there's over-reporting because that doesn't fit their model. But, you know, if they do, if they start getting the medical records, then they're going to have to go to the medical access standard, medical records and medical access standard. I'm trying to remember, that's 1020, I think, or 1030. I'm trying to remember. One's bloodborne pathogen. I think 1030 is bloodborne. But anyway, so you have certain rights that they have to do before they can even get into medical records. So you need to be aware of that. Other areas under the emphasis program, they're going to be looking at ergonomics. Once again, they're going to be looking at process safety management. They're going to be looking at confined space. They're going to be looking at electrical. They're going to look at your hazard communications. And, you know, one of the things that's coming up in June 1st of this year, you should have pretty much all your MSDS sheets should now be changed over to the safety data sheets, SDSs. Now, one thing I would tell you, please, when you're trading out or when you're swapping out or whatever, when you're changing your MSDs to your SDSs, please keep the MSDSs. You need to keep them in a file. Because these are medical records, or accident exposure records, which are covered under 1910, 1020, and you're supposed to be keeping those for 30 years. Why this is even more important is because the information that is on MSDS is a lot less. The hazards associated with it are a lot less than what you have on the SDSs. The SDSs are designed to really identify all kinds of hazards in much more detail than ever before. They even got combustible dust in there, you know, and so we need to be aware of all this kind of thing there, and we got all these PELs and the RELs and everything else, not just even if there's no OSHA PEL, they're going to put in the other RELs and other PELs from the Industrial Government Industrial Hygienists Association. All these things they're going to be looking at. So that information is not on your MSDSs for the most part. So that if somebody got exposed to something and 10 years down the road, you know, they were here 5 years before, and then they quit, and then they come back 10 years later and say, hey, I contracted this disease here from the chemicals that I was exposed to. Well, they got, once again, that's going to have to show that you had knowledge. Well, if you go to the FDS sheets, they may show, because now they're putting, you know, the manufacturers of these chemicals are just, these are CYA, basically, documents for them. So they're putting in everything conceivable in there. And so you might be able to say, well, look, this was a hazard, and they determined that this would be a hazard. But the answer is, well, but we didn't know that back when you were here working for us, and here's the old MSDS sheet that shows that that wasn't listed as a hazard. And therefore, we had no knowledge, and therefore, we're not going to be liable. That's why this is so. You're supposed to keep the documents anyway, but you need it probably more so for your legal potential legal liability. Now, so you want to make sure you do it on that. Then they're going to look on hexavalent chromium. And where this comes into play is when your maintenance people are welding on stainless steel. That's where you're getting the hexavalent chromium. And because of all the stainless steel that you have at your facilities, you need to be aware of that. And if they're doing welding, you better have some documentation as that you've done some air monitoring that shows that they're not, that employees are not exposed to levels above the PEL. So that's something you want to be, one of the things you want to do. They're going to be looking at machine guarding and biological hazards they're going to be looking at. And they're going to look some another kind of other hazards, like, you know, including noise, chemical, thermal, struck by hazards. These are the type of things that they're going to be looking at as they're going. Slips, trips, and falls, evacuation plans, access pedestrian, pedestrian worker safety at the trucking and receiving and shipping areas, those type of things. And also they're going to look at the toilet and sanitary facilities and making sure that the employees have access to them. Of course, you know, OSHA came back last year, I think it was October last year, I can't remember exactly right off here, and they talked about, they came out about, they put out a guidance, it wasn't anything that's technically binding on OSHA or binding on employers, but they talked about transgender bathrooms. So they got into that whole thing, so we need to be aware of that, and I think that's kind of one of the things they may be asking about, So just be on the aware that if they start asking about bathrooms and anything, or if they mention about transgender, your radar antenna should pop right up and say, oh, that talked about that. We need to be a little bit careful about that. Now, as I said, Region 7, the emphasis program, covers most of those, but not all those. I put this thing here about this new weighing system. This is the other thing. You know, and as a matter of fact, I just got a citation from for a client that came in overnight from OSHA for a client of mine, and unfortunately they got hit for over $100,000. And I feel bad for the client because I don't think there's a whole series of things I'm going to have to deal with on that one, but that I think OSHA was improper about. But you know, one of the things that I'm really concerned about, and I have told Michaels, I have told the director of enforcement, this idea about this weighted system where the most points, this is a point system that the area directors get, the highest points, AEUs, goes to significant cases. That should be cases, not costs. Significant cases. Well, significant cases is $100,000 or more. And, you know, but the thing is, but then the next one is process safety management. Okay, and that gets 7 units. Well, process safety management inspection is probably going to involve 2 or 3 employees. And you got to understand during these inspections under this whole system, you may be having one person show up one day, 3 people show up the next, doing into different things. You may be having people coming from other regions. I mean, although with Region 6 having their emphasis program, too, it's going to be hard. But the PSM, most of the PSM experts for OSHA are in Region 6. Well, you need to be aware of this there. But look, PSM standard, the PSM case, which to me, PSM is the most complicated of all the OSHA standards. There's just no doubt about it. It's most definitely. I've testified as an expert witness on them that it is by far the most complicated of all the standards. But here, and they can last a month, 6 months, arguably, depending on all the detail they go in it, and it could involve a whole lot of inspectors, 2 or 3 inspectors, where a significant case, one inspector may go in and be there half a day and come out with a $100,000 thing. To me, I think, and that's what I told the OSHA, is I think having significant cases, having the highest number of EUs that you get, units of both, you know, basically encourages area directors to try to get penalize companies big time. So, and you know, and right now they're going after the poultry industry big and that type of thing. And look at the ergonomic hazards, get 5 EUs. So there's going to be an encouragement to all these things. And here you guys are talking about being attacked. This Northwest Arkansas Worker Justice Report on wages and work conditions talk about how terrible the poultry industry is. But if you read the thing, what bothers me is if you really read the report, it's in the background, and you know, I kind of wonder, you know, is this really an accurate reflection of what's out there? I kind of doubt it, to be quite truthful. I think, once again, you can do reports, and you can do, like, statistics, and you can prove whatever you want to prove. So, but anyway. And here I've talked about all the different things that the common air, I think we've covered on the regional emphasis program, all these different things on the biological hazards. Once again, I can't say those by all the names of those things there. I'm not a doctor, so, and I was really bad in science in high school. But these are the things they're going to be looking at. And these are the things, so if you know these are things, that these are things that OSHA is going to show up, we need to prepare in advance. We need to make sure that we have everything in place. You know, including our sanitation here, making sure that our cleanup of stuff, of our equipment and everything meets all the standards. Because, you know, if OSHA thinks there's a problem here, guess what? They may be doing referrals. They do referrals. They got agreements with Wage Hour, so they're doing referrals to Wage Hour on during their inspections. They got a referral with the Department of Justice, their Memorandum of Understanding for Justice for criminal stuff. They're doing that. They got a memorandum of understanding with the EPA, so if they think you're creating, you know, air or water contamination, they maybe they'll call up EPA and have them come on over. So we need to be very careful about this. This is very important here. And like I say, these are the type of the focus areas. These are the areas that were under that original inspection guidelines. So. All right, I put this in here, this slide here, because you got to know that during the inspection, OSHA has to prove their violations, all right? There's a burden of proof, and we'll talk about just those in a second there. But you need to understand that one of the biggest things, or the biggest issue that OSHA has to prove is that you, the employer, had knowledge of the violative condition. So how do they do that? Well, because they can't, you have a company is an inanimate, basically an object, it's not a human being. So how do you impute, how do you get knowledge of the company to be able to, how does OSHA get knowledge to be able to prove that the employer knew of the violations or the condition? The answer is they impute the knowledge of the supervisors or managers to, the test is, and this is the test, OSHA has to prove that the employer knew of the violation or with the exercise of reasonable diligence, could have known of the non-compliant condition. So, you know, I got a case right now involving a pool. It's a plug. It's a plug in a piece of machinery. This was in a laundry thing, and you could hardly. And OSHA cited them for that the strain relief that we had to touch had been utilized, and the wire had. You know, the outer coating of the wires, not the wires themselves, but the outer coater that was wrapped around the wires, which had rubber coating around those, the first coat had kind of pumped slightly apart. Well, my position is here, the plug is plugged in underneath the machine. I cannot see it. The employer could not see it. So how do I have knowledge or even with the exercise of reasonable diligence? And, of course, their position is going to be, well, you should have been doing your part of your maintenance cleanup. You should have been looking at this thing. Well, they had to almost pull the darn thing out just to get them to show that it was separated. So it's just one of the things you're going to have to realize. This is how they got to be focused. So you need to be always, and this is where a lot of, pretty much most employers fall down on during inspection. They don't think of what is the citations that OSHA is looking at, or what are the potential violations that they think they're out there. And how are they going to prove that? And how can I show them that we didn't? They can't prove it. So, and I will talk more about that, but that is very critical during the entire inspection. You must always be thinking about this. When OSHA looks at something and says, and remember this, when OSHA looks at something, it is not, you don't ask if you think there's a violation there. You can say to them, because there's never a violation. We don't violate the law. But we know that OSHA may have some concerns. So if we see that they're looking at something or they take a photograph of something and we're not exactly sure what their concern is, we just ask them. We can't be afraid. You can say, listen, I know she took a picture of that. Do you have some concern about that that we need to maybe address? And find out what they're doing. You can't be afraid of people asking these questions, but it's always a concern. It's not a violation. But when we're reviewing these concerns during the inspection, we should be saying, okay, this is a concern. And here's what, you know, here's the, arguably what OSHA standard may be applicable. And how is OSHA going to be able to show that this really is applicable and how we're going to defend against that? And then at the same time, do I need, if I'm taking pictures, I'm taking the same pictures OSHA taking, is there other pictures, is there another direction I should be taking pictures of? You know, I got another case here. Once again, this is at a laundry thing, and we had a knockout in an electrical box. And OSHA took a picture of the knockout and then basically cited us and said, well, look at this. You could get dust, lint dust up into it, and that could create a fire hazard. Well, I said, well, why don't we get a picture? Where is this thing? Can somebody stick their finger in? The guy said, hell no, they can't stick their finger. I should probably shouldn't say that. But he said, no, you can't stick your finger in it because it's 10 feet off the ground. Well, sure enough, the OSHA inspector's photographs wouldn't have shown that. So I said, well, go back out there and get a ladder, get somebody on it, get a tape measure, and hold at the bottom, hold the beginning of the tape at the bottom, run the tape all the way up, and show how high this is. And show that, hey, first of all, there's no way anybody can stick their finger in there because it's 10 feet off the ground. We had to take extra pictures just to show that there's no violation here. And so it's, once again, but this, you've got to be thinking about this the entire inspection. You cannot just go on autopilot, take the pictures that they're taking, provide the documents they ask for, and you know, because they're not entitled to it. But we'll get into that a little bit more in a second. So, all right, so. And this is the other reason they need to know, because once again, any knowledge that the supervisor has is imputed to the company. If there's a manager or supervisor, you know, sometimes the lead men, you know, may fall under the supervisor classification. You need to understand. So whatever the supervisor knows can be imputed. Now, however, that's not always the case, because there was a recent 11th Circuit decision that said, I think it was 11th Circuit, yeah, 11th Circuit. Anyway, it said in that particular case that where you have a supervisor who's actually doing the violation, violating the company rules or whatever, to cause them the violative condition, and it's just the supervisor and nobody else, then the knowledge that he has that he's violating the company rules and violating OSHA standard is not imputed to the company, all right? That's a very, but then they came out with another decision right after that about 6 months later and said, well, by the way, we can clarify this a little bit. If the supervisor agreeing to some type, sees some violation that's being being done by an employee, and he kind of agrees with them or doesn't do anything about it and just acknowledges they're there or participates in it, then that, even though he has now has his own employee misconduct, the fact that another employee, an hourly employee, was violating rules, he has that knowledge, and that knowledge can be imputed to this to the company. So this is how OSHA, you know, they have to prove that they have that violation. So, or they have to prove that the company, that the supervisor had that knowledge. And if it's the supervisor creating the hazard and doing the violation, then that information, that we're not going to get that imputed. So. I put this in here because this is a very important aspect of the offenses. Discipline is what I think, to me, discipline is very crucial to a is very crucial to a good safety program. To be quite frank, like I said, I've been doing this since 1980. If you're not going to discipline people for safety violations and they know that, guess what? You're not going to have a safe work site. It's just not going to happen. People I need to have is every humans are humans, and if you don't draw a line in the sand, or if you draw a line in the sand, people are going to go up to that line. They may not, hopefully, they're not going to cross it. That's why we draw the line in the sand. But people need to know if you violate our safety. Here's our safety rules first. Here's our, you know, here's our stuff on lockout, tagout. Here's our whatever. Here's our rules. And if you violate those rules, you're going to be disciplined, and depending on how severe they are or the violation is, you might even get terminated. And that has to be in our policy. But it's very important because it's in a, as I said, it says there, this is an element of the OSHA's affirmative defense of unprofessional employee misconduct. I shouldn't say it's OSHA's defense. It's actually the employer's defense. OSHA issues a citation, and here's the, let's just look at the defense. Here's what you have to have in order to prove the employee misconduct defense. This is an affirmative defense. So it's not OSHA's burden to show that you did meet these. It's your burden to show that you did in order to assert the defense. So you have to show that you have an established work rule. Okay, let's just take lockout tagging because that's the easiest one. We have a lockout tagout policy that says you can't do service and maintenance on equipment without first locking it out. Then we have lockout tagout procedures for each of the pieces of equipment. Here's our procedures. So we have all that. Then we're going to train the employees. So we got to make sure that when they know that, and you can document this, see that very last bullet on the very bottom down there, document the above action. This is very critical. So you got to be able to document, yes, here's our policy, here's our lockout tagout procedures, here's the training that we did on employee X who wasn't following the lockout tagout procedure, but shows that he was properly trained on our company's lockout tagout policy and how to use the procedures. Then we also take appropriate steps to discipline. This one and the next one are where employers most of the time fall down on, in my experience, fall down on and being able to prove the defense. So basically, you have to take appropriate steps to discover a violation. So you should be quiet, and this is what I recommend. And if you want to have a good safety program, you should be doing these things. You know, your supervisors or foreman, whoever it is, your supervisors should be doing, you know, daily walk-arounds of their areas, and they should document that they've done this thing, and one of the things they're looking for is our employees working safely. And we can have a checklist on this stuff there. Are the guards in place? Is anybody doing any lockout tagout? Did they do the proper procedures for lockout tagout? All these things we can check, and so the supervisors should have a little checklist, a little piece of paper. It doesn't have to be a full page or anything. It just be, on this time, this is when I did my walk around through my area of the facility, and I made sure that I didn't observe anybody violating any safety rules. They're following the safety rules, they're doing the things properly. We might even want to note some stuff in there that they're doing properly. So we might want to reward people for doing the right thing. Then we probably should have, if we have a manager of a supervisor, that manager probably needs to get out, or maybe even the plant manager, facility manager, whatever his title is, he should probably be doing a walk around once a day. You know, that you need to get your people out on the floor, your management people out on the floor. They cannot stay in their office all day, particularly the ones that are charged with the operations. You know, and they should be, and once again, the facility manager should do a walk around. He should have a piece of paper, and he can mark, I went to these departments, I didn't observe any, so I looked for people if they're violating it. And if I find something that the person is actually violating one of our safety rules, then we go to the next one. Then we're going to make sure they get disciplined. But we want to have that documentation, and that's where most employers don't have any documentation. Well, do you do anything live? Well, I look around at everything. Yeah, I'm always looking around to make sure everybody's doing it safe. Well, did you document that? No, I didn't document that. Well, you need to have a form for your managers. You need to have a form for your supervisors. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be just something that says, here's the student's name. Here's the shift they're on. Here's the date that they were doing these things. And I've checked off that they look through their areas and they observe it. Or if they see somebody violating, then they denote in there. Saw Joe not properly locking out. You know, stopped him from doing the doing the service and maintenance until the lockout was properly done, and then receive discipline. But we need to be able to document these things, and then when we see people violating the rules, we've got to document, we've got to discipline them. Now, that doesn't mean you terminate everybody as soon as they violate one safety rule. You have a policy on how it goes. Most people have progressive discipline, and I think that's a fair way to handle it. People need to know that they're, you know, but then again, if they're sticking their body, they're not following lockout, tagout, and they're sticking their body into inside a machine, and there's live energy parts and electrical and everything else, well, guess what? Maybe termination is appropriate there. Because if you're lucky enough to catch it before something happens and gets killed, you know, maybe you need to save them themselves. But anyway, those are the things you need to do. This is critical. Because this, and the reason I put this in here right up front, if you look at the defenses that OSHA, successful defenses that employers use against OSHA citations, probably 65% of the defense used that is successful is this defense, is the employee misconduct defense. So we need to be, that's why this is so important. Now, I put this in this, and I think you're going to get copies of all these, all the slides and everything. I put this in here, and here's the top 10 for poultry industry, okay? These are the top most frequently cited standards. Why I put this in there is if you know when OSHA comes into your facility, in your industry, this is what they find most frequently, and then we got to do it. So number one is process safety management. We need to realize that. We need to got lockout targets, number two. Machine guard is number three. Electrical is number four. We got actually four and five, the general requirements and a wiring proceeding. Six is maintenance, once again, of exit routes. Guarding four and wall openings. Machine guarding again. Hazard communication. And then OSHA's general duty clause. And the way the general duty clause this is, and I think we're seeing more of this, is obviously the ergonomics issues here. That's because there is no OSHA standard for this. So you got to realize this is what we're looking. This is what they're going to be focusing on. So, all right, let's keep moving along because we got, all right. Now we're really kind of getting into the act and getting into the inspection itself. So, as a general rule, you know, the act covers all employers in all states, territories, and District of Columbia. The only exception are those things there, self-employed, family farmers, state governments, and workers covered by other laws such as mining, railroads, and airlines. So for the most part, any employer is going to be covered under OSHA. If you got one employee, you're covered, okay? The next thing is, you know, and I talked about these, about the fatality reporting and the inpatient hospital loss by amputations. We got to do that. We got to record work-related deaths, injuries, and illness, too, on the 300 logs. And the other thing we need to be remembering here is that Section 11C is the whistleblower provision. There is a huge focus on OSHA, too, by OSHA, on record-keeping, actually on whistleblowing. If you look at the number of OSHA whistleblower complaints that have been filed, they've been very much focused on that, and you can just go, if you don't have any idea, if you think that, if you want to know how serious they are about filing complaints, all you got to do is go on www.osha.gov, and that's the homepage for the OSHA website, which is a really good website, and if you've not been on it, you really need to utilize it, because there's a lot of great information there. But the very first thing when you get to the homepage is what are you going to see on the right-hand side? You're going to see file a complaint. So they're very focused on this, you know, that they want it. And the number of complaints that have been filed have really significantly increased. And so all the employee has to do is click on that, and you put in the name, his name or her name, home address, phone number, company name, address, phone number, supervisor, and then you put on how you were discriminated or retaliated against. And if you're not sure, guess what? They got a checklist for you. So you just have to check, you have to click on those things, and then you submit, and it's gone. So you need to understand, this is why so many employers, you know, we're seeing so many whistleblower complaints. So you need to be aware of this, that this is going on big time, and the number of for cause determinations have also dramatically increased. When I was head of OSHA, we were averaging about 5 to 7% for cause. Now they're up to like 17, 18, 19%. Because there's been a big push, and the career, the politicals there basically said to the careers and the inspectors saying, hey, 5% is not, you know, there's more than that, that can't be right. You must be missing stuff. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, then they started finding stuff. So anyway, we'll see, but you just need to realize that. And during the inspection, when they're interviewing employees, and they're and when they tell this to all, both hourly and management, if you think that your company is retaliating against it because you've been helping us out on this thing, then you have whistleblower rights and you need to call me and we've got lawyers that will take care of this. So you need to be really aware of that type of thing occurring. It happens, you know, that's at every inspection. When they interview people, that's what they tell them, all right? Here's our other stuff that we want to make sure we have in place beforehand. We want to make sure we have our OSHA poster. You know, they used to look at that all the time. I haven't seen it that much, but if you don't have it, they usually have a copy, and as a general rule, they won't cite you for it, but, you know, they could. Also, you want to make sure that you have people that are assigned responsibility to make sure that we are compliant, that we have our safety, what standards that are applicable to us, and that that people are assigned responsibility to make sure that those things are, that we're fully compliant with it. And also, we want to assign responsibility, and you should do this for any government official that shows up. You should know who is, if they're coming to your plant, the first thing they're going to meet is a guard or a receptionist. That guard or receptionist should be trained, first of all, to know who they need to contact, on depending on things, and also know that they don't comment to the OSHA inspector while you're waiting for the facility manager ever to show up, or the safety director, or the HR person. It may be a series of things. But we need to realize, we need to have some people assigned to those areas. They need to know they're assigned to that area. And then part of their responsibilities, going back to that list I gave you on the most frequently cited citation or standards, you need to make sure we're in full compliance. Those are the ones that are applicable to your operations. So we need to be looking at that. Then we need to see that we've done the training and we've done all the record keeping that we're supposed to be doing. Have we done a hazard assessment and we've abated that? Under the OSHA PPE standard, you are required to do a hazard assessment for the safety and health hazards that necessitates the use of PPE. So you should have done a hazard assessment for PPE of hazards in your site that need PPE, and you are required to have a written certification that you did the hazard assessment. 70% of the companies in the United States don't have this, and OSHA knows about that, so they're asking for it. And guess what? Why are they doing that? Because it's an easy citation. All right? So we want to really focus up. They know these things here, so we need to be having it. We need to do our hazard assessment. We need to know that when we identify a hazard, our goal is to figure out how we can get it. And if you have a third-party people coming in there doing audits, as we sound there, you need to be reviewing those things because OSHA is going to be able to get them. There's not going to be a work product privilege, attorney work product privilege for audits done internally or externally unless you can show it was done in anticipation of litigation. Now, if you have an accident and you're going to do an accident investigation, yeah, you can pull it under the privilege. And you should pull it under the privilege for the accident investigation report. But your lawyer is going to have to direct that work. So you need to, if you have an in-house counsel, you should be doing, we're going to keep going on this. Anyway, and if you're using temporary employees, that is one of the first things they're going to ask you in the log. Here's the priorities that we have here, they're going to focus. People want to know how they get in here. We talked about some of this stuff there on the self-referrals particularly. All during inspection, you need to remember, it's your facility. You have rights. You need to conduct the inspection. Under the Act, the inspection must be conducted in a reasonable manner and a reasonable time. So if they want to interview your employees, your hourly employees, and they're just coming off a 12-hour night shift, and they want to interview them, they want you to keep them over and so they can interview them, that may not be reasonable. We got to talk about that stuff. So you need to understand that. They can't call you and say, hey, at 3 in the morning and say, we're here out at your facility. We want to start the inspection because we understand there's some problems here on the night shift. Well, I'm not there. Maybe we need to start the inspection first thing in the morning or whatever. Or you need to give me some time to get there anyway. The inspection under the Act has to be completed in 6 months. So whenever this inspection starts, you have to receive the citations. Well, I shouldn't say that. The citations have to be issued within 6 months. But as I mentioned before, you want to be cooperative and responsive, but you want to maintain control during the entire inspection here. And how do you determine that? Well, like I said before, you need to know what standards apply to your operation. You make sure that the support staff knows that they're trained on what to say and what to do. Know what to say when the government shows up. And this should be everything. If a person shows up to serve some type of restraining order against somebody because their girlfriend or boyfriend or something, a lot of times the boyfriend gets the restraining order by the girlfriend. So, you got to be a little bit careful of that when you want to make sure who's going to be handling that. And you may want to have, just from a potential workplace violence situation, you want to make sure that you got the people there to make sure everything's okay. The secretary or the receptionist or the guard should know who's the person, if OSHA shows up, who's the person responsible for that. If the sheriff shows up to serve a warrant, who's going to be doing it? It may be the same person, it may not be. So you understand that OSHA gives no advance notice. They have a one-hour rule. I've had clients always say, well, can you task them to come back in an hour? And the answer is, no, they can't. Or should you come back next day? You'll say, wait, we're really busy. Can you have them come back, tell them to come back tomorrow? No, the answer is no. They'll stay there for 1 hour. If you don't let them start the inspection, then they'll leave and go get a warrant to come in. So, and if you're unsure about the employees, if this is really an OSHA inspector, you can confirm that with the thing. All right. Should we demand a warrant? Under the law, you can. It's your facility. It's with the way they're expanding inspections, we're certainly starting to seriously think about this. But it's a policy call. Some employers routinely require warrants. If you're a government employer, government agency, you need to have a warrant to come into our facility. That's just our policy. If you have a family time, you may want to ask for that just to be able to get all your ducks in a row. But you got to understand, you're not going to be at the the federal magistrate's going to answer. This is an ex parte proceeding, so you're not going to be there. So, all right, opening conference, very important that you ascertain the purpose of the inspection, as I mentioned before. And when we get that, if it's a complaint, get the copy of the complaint. Make sure that OSHA understands we're allowing you to come in here, but we're only allowing you the inspection based on the complaint. We're not allowing you to do anything else. And you got to say that. We got to set the ground rules. Here's the ground rules. That's one of the ground rules. Second ground rule is you cannot be walking around the facility by yourself. You have to have a management person with you at all times. If you want any documents, if you're going to ask for a bunch of documents, we ask you to put them in writing so we can get you exactly what you asked for and what you're entitled to, because they're not entitled to everything they ask for. And when you're doing employee interviews, we want them to be done off the floor, not on the floor, we will make a conference room available for them. And for management employees, we will have another management person there. If it's a fatality, you're going to have the company attorney there. And then the last one is, I don't think that's all the ground rules. Documents, inspection. Witness, yeah, that's it. Oh, and if we're going to do anything, if you want to do any type of monitoring, we can't do it by separately. We're going to do side-by-side monitoring. Those are the ground rules. You've got to tell them that at the opening conference. Don't wait till later on. That's what you do. We're not going to volunteer any information. Once again, we're going to treat them in a professional manner. We're going to notify our corporate officials and council that OSHA's on site. We're going to coordinate any contractors or vendors, because OSHA may ask about if they're exposed to stuff, they may want to bring them an open inspection on them. And if we have any trade secret issues, which is kind of unlikely, but we can designate those areas. During the rock around, the inspection may last several hours or several months. We have that right to accompany, and we will exercise that right. Never, never, never let them there by themselves. If you have a union there, then you can, that employee representative. Sometimes, if there's no union, sometimes the compliance officer will ask you to have somebody, one of the hourly employees, accompany them. But once again, limit the areas seen by the compliance officer to the areas of the complaint. If they try to go other ways, you must stop them right away and say, under our ground rules we set up, the complaint is just for this. What is the basis you want to go over this area, which has nothing to do with the complaint? Why do you want to go there? And that they say, I think we see something over there. Well, I'm sorry, we're allowing you to inspect only for those areas. We're not allowing you to go there. So you're going to have to be tough sometimes. We've got to make sure the compliance officer complies with false safety rules. You must take accurate notes. This is one of the areas I find I get called in a lot of times. Half the time I'm involved in inspection, half the time I don't get involved until OSHA issues citations. During the inspection, and then I ask for, well, who did they talk to? What did they see? And they don't have the note one. They don't know who they interviewed with. You need to take accurate notes. Here's when they showed up. Here's when the open conference started. Here's what was discussed in the open conference. Here's when it closed. Here's when we started to walk around. Here's the areas we went to. Here's the pictures, how many pictures you took. We took the same pictures. Here's the employees they interviewed. Here's the documents they requested. Here's the documents we provided. All that stuff must be documented. And we're going to do the same thing that OSHA does. If they take photographs, we take the exact same photograph. Period. We got to keep our own stuff. But once again, we're maintaining control. We're not staging events of the accident, and we're not destroying any evidence. Now, that staging accident, I get this thing. I had one case when an employee got hurt. He was changing a tire on a forklift, and he had jacked up the forklift, taken off the wheel, and his foot or leg was underneath the thing as he's pulling the thing off. When he pulled off, the jack slipped off and fell on his leg and broke the bone. OSHA came in. They wanted me, the client, to jack up the forklift exactly as it was right before the accident. And they called me up and said they want to do this. I said, hell no. There's the forklift. There's the jack right next to it. There's the wheel. That's the picture they get. So don't agree to do anything. I had a client that said, OSHA said, well, we want to see what's behind here. They had put up these bins, and they said, we want you to cut a hole in the bin so we can look past it. Sure enough, the client did. They cut a hole in it. You don't have to do that. That is not your responsibility. First of all, if nothing else, it voided their warranty on the bin that they put in, you know, and it's just, you know, so we don't do that. But don't destroy evidence, too. That's the other thing, because if you want to go to jail, this is the easiest way to do it. One thing that you want to make sure is maintain control during that. When you're doing the employee interviews, you need to let the employees know their rights, that they don't have to sign anything. If we do a management, when they're doing supervisors or management interviews, we always have someone present. And once again, they don't have to sign anything, and they should be told, you know, you don't have to sign anything, and I wouldn't sign anything if you don't do that. You also want to make sure that during the closing conference, you identify all the things that they think there was a hazard, and if you have abated them, you need to go ahead and note the things that you've corrected. And once again, these are not violations, these are just concerns. And then when it comes to it enforcing, or if you get citations, then you should always go to an informal conference. Sometimes people want to think they should. You never sign an expedited settlement agreement. You should always go to at least an informal conference. And then you need to determine, based on what you have, can you defend the citations? And that will determine whether or not, you know, you file a notice of contest or not.
We're going to turn it over to Marcus so he can cover a few kind of industry points from his perspective, and then we will try to get to a couple of quick questions.
Thank you, Chase. And I'll just take just a few minutes just to cover some context, provide a little context on what we are hearing from industry. So what are we doing to ensure that we are 24/7 inspection ready? What's new out there? In our conversations with industry safety leaders, we see some key areas of focus today. So programs and processes that will strengthen and sustain workplace safety. Culture, right? Culture, everyone's talking about culture again, a culture of safety. What is a culture of safety? What is a safety culture? A simple definition of culture is a collection of behaviors. I saw a post the other day on the Aubrey Daniels blog, a recognized leader in behavioral safety, that had a good definition of safety culture. A set of core values and behaviors that emphasize safety as an overriding priority. Simple and clean. So a proactive safety culture always comes down to behavior. Today we see safety leaders focused on observation, verification, and coaching of right behaviors. And that goes hand in hand with supervisor line worker engagement. Because if you're performing observations the right way, you're engaging team members in positive conversations and building a strong safety culture every day. You're rewarding people for doing things right, and you're documenting everything. So in building and sustaining that strong safety culture, you're reinforcing the message constantly. You provide foundational training and then posters, digital signage, observations, and huddle talks that reinforce and lock down that training. So why does Coca-Cola spend millions of dollars on advertising? We all know what Coke is, right? But they are determined to ensure that our moment of refreshment includes a Coke. And you better be certain that your line worker's moment of decision results in the right behavior. So just to close, from my piece of this, how can Alchemy help? So we continue to evolve the Alchemy platform to make sure our customers are 24/7 inspection ready. Our latest enhancements ensure coordinated closed loop programs for teaching and sustaining right behaviors. From training to reinforcement, Alchemy provides synchronized and consistent materials, huddle guides, digital signage, mobile observations, and coaching that is coordinated and documented automatically. Also, employee perception surveys are an important tool that we're hearing more and more of our customers are implementing. We can benchmark your workforce against our 2015 Mind of the Food Worker study, a survey of 1,200 food workers. You'll be able to get more information on these tools and programs via the webinar follow-up communication. So I'm going to leave you with this thought. The great coach John Wooden said, "The true test of a man's character is what he does when no one is watching." What is the safety character of your workplace? So think about that, and thank you for your time and attention.
Well, terrific. Well, again, we understand that we are on a bit of a time crunch, but we have one question that came through that we want to make sure that we address. Ed, I'm going to direct this question your way. The question came up, when they inspect medical records, they being OSHA, would this be a workers' comp file, or should it be included as part of the workers' comp file?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on what they're requesting. A lot of times they ask for the medical records when they're doing the record-keeping audit, and I've done hundreds of record-keeping audits for clients over the years, and I've been involved with OSHA record-keeping requests. If they're asking for the workers' comp data, information as a general rule, and you use some of that automatically in your record-keeping requirements, because most employers that I've worked with use the OSHA a workers' comp first report of injury form as in lieu of the OSHA 301. So that information there is not any personal medical information, diagnosis or stuff like that, pure medical records, which they would be able to access, OSHA would be able to access, without a medical access order. Now, when they get to, those type of records made, there are other workers' comp records, workers' comp records that may not have the pure medical information there. They might be entitled to without that. But once you get into the point where they're seeking medical information, the medical results or testing results and stuff like that of employees, that may fall in the medical requirement for medical access order. Now, if you have areas where you're requiring people to use respirators, you're going to have to do pulmonary function testing, surveys, questions, and stuff like that. That kind of information generally doesn't reach to the medical record requirements for an access order. So it is a little bit tricky there, but you really need to be looking. If they're asking for personal individual employees' medical records as such, I think that's when you would say, I think that information is personal or privilege or private, and therefore, if you want to get that, then we're going to need a medical access order from you before we provide that information, because you still want to protect yourself from any type of, if you just turn over documents to OSHA, you do open yourself up, particularly per individual employees' personal information, and particularly medical records. I think you open yourself up to potential for some type of privacy, invasion of privacy lawsuit. So there is a whole series of questions you need to be asking. And today I was dealing with another client where OSHA has asked for the previous employees' home addresses and phone numbers. Once again, I think I'm a little bit concerned that there's a privacy issue, and basically what we've come down to is tell OSHA that, either we're going to have to contact all these people and tell them that you want them want this information, we have to get that okay from you or from them to give that information, or we're going to ask you to give us a subpoena for this information so that we have a legal process that we're turning this information over based on some type of legal process, and therefore protect ourselves against some type of invasion of privacy lawsuit.
Terrific. Thank you so much for that answer. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are officially out of time. I want to take a quick moment to thank both Ed and Marcus for joining us on today's webinar and providing such wonderful information. And then also thank you for all of our participants out there who have taken time out of the day to join us. We very much appreciate it. When we exit this webinar, you will notice a survey that appears on the screen. We encourage you to take a few minutes to provide us some feedback on future topics that you would like covered or any ways that we might be able to improve the process or the experience for yourself. That also pertains to what Marcus had said. If you're interested in any of Alchemy's solutions, there will be corresponding checkboxes that you can complete on that exit survey, and we will happily reach out to discuss any of those offerings. And again, this will be available on demand as well as the PowerPoint slide deck, which takes about 48 hours for that to be available. You will receive an email notification when those assets are ready for download. Again, thank you everybody for taking the time, and we look forward to seeing you at our next webinar in the future. Again, thank you and have a great rest of your day.